We are back for a new episode of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, I'm Jason Floyd. That is Daniel Gavalos. We're here to talk everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Of course, we come in here following UFC 299, which, Daniel, I think really the best way to describe it is it was a masterclass by Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, it was absolutely a really great performance out of him. He went out there against Cheeto, outstruck him, controlled the cage, had a successful title defense. O'Malley continues to be one of the best bantamweights in the world, and I think it's about time he takes on the champ, Merab. Sorry. He's going to go take on Ilia Topuria after defending the title one time. O'Malley is amazing. He's phenomenal, and he proved it. But, dude, it's time for the Merab fight. No more hiding. No more ducking. Get down to business, Sean O'Malley. If you want to be the best 135er, you're proving it on the feet you are. Take on Merab. Let's go.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day, and I was like, Dana White kind of talked about it a little bit after in the post-fight press conference. You can kind of tell, I think he's a little frustrated with fighters, you know, not even making the title defenses, talking about Ilia Topuria, and they're already talking about going up a weight class, whatnot. So we'll see what happens there. Of course, we'll talk about UFC 299. Also, we'll talk about what happened on Friday in Saudi Arabia with Anthony Joshua just brutally KOing Francis Ngannou. Also, we'll talk about the bizarre finish at PFL Paris. By the way, speaking of PFL, they've made a ton of fight announcements this week. We get into UFC Vegas 88, talk about some other things going on in the world of MMA. But, you know, one of the things I always like to kind of talk about is, you know, things happen in my life. And, you know, one of the things you hear fighters talk about is motivation, Daniel. And Monday morning, I get up. Didn't really feel like getting up, but got up and got my early morning workout in. I'm probably about like 10 minutes into my cardio session, not really feeling it. And then I just get this motivation. I see this gentleman. My guess is he's probably like in his 50s. And he's coming upstairs to the cardio area, and he's walking with the cane, and then he gets on elliptical. And I'm sitting there going, Jason, if this guy can get up the stairs and needs the assistance of a cane, he gets on the elliptical, you can get your fat ass up here on this treadmill and start running.
Oh, I mean, that's unbelievable motivation, bro. I love it. I love to hear it. And that's the cool thing about the cycle of life at the gym. You go to the gym. You see the high schoolers that are still, you know, trying to maximize their bodies in the football team, trying to put in that extra work so whatever high school sport they play, they do well at. You see the people in our age range who are trying to have sexy bodies, trying to look like an Avenger. And you see people who are older who are just trying to maintain their physical body or slightly improve it whenever they may have some limitations, whether it be an injury or whatnot. And to see something like that and get inspired, I love it, bro. I love it. The motivation for me is I'm reading a book about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I'm in the chapter where it basically discusses the transformation that these people go on. Like, whenever they get cast, like Chris Pratt became Star-Lord, and he was a chubby dude on Parks and Rec, and he becomes Star-Lord. You know, Chris Evans becomes Captain America. Hemsworth becomes Thor. So I read these things and I see how quickly they do it. And I'm like, all right, I need that motivation to become a good looking pro wrestler. I mean, I know that they didn't necessarily include the details about the steroid intake, but I can follow a lot of the other routines. So I'm glad this couple of days we both got, you know, different types of motivation, my man.
Yeah, man. I saw it, man. And, you know, I mean, look, I'm on this, you know, this journey just to, I would just say to feel better about myself more than anything else, just physically feel better about yourself. And, you know, I've been, you know, when that alarm goes off at 5 a.m., it's like, shit, time to get up.
Yeah.
I will say this, when that alarm went off this morning, hit the snooze lot.
Oh, dude, most days I hit the snooze button. The only day I don't hit the snooze button is when we record this podcast in the morning, because I have timed it out to where, as you can tell by my hair, I have just woken up. I have timed it out to where I have no wiggle room. We are on different time zones, so it's a little earlier for me. You still woke up an hour, 20 minutes earlier before me. But I'm the type of person who wakes up at 7 in the morning most days.
So I don't know if you're like me, and do you check your Facebook memories?
Not at, like, it just pops up. Like, it's the first thing I see. I don't know if there's a tab, but
For first time, I'm like horrified at things I posted when I was in my 20s. But yeah. I don't know if you realize this. Yesterday was a 13-year anniversary of the UFC buying Strikeforce.
I didn't even realize that. That is crazy. It's crazy.
It's one of those things that it's one of those news stories that you kind of remember where you were. I remember I was working in radio. I was out doing a gig and I literally got a text that said UFC buys Strikeforce. And the person who texted to me, I was like, all right, you're screwing with me. He goes, no, legit. It just got announced. I was like, holy crap.
It's crazy to think it's been 13 years that we would turn on Showtime and watch Strikeforce fights. That's almost two decades. Like, the difference between now and then in the beginning of the UFC has got to be almost the same amount of time. Could be wrong about that. I don't have the math. What year did they do Strikeforce?
Well, that would have been, we are in 2011.
2011, so 13 years. Okay, so 13 years before that, it was 1998.
Think about this. Think about, like, if you go back to 2011, how you consumed mixed martial arts in comparison to how you consume it now. And just of how you get to the product. The fact is, we're now in a world where we're pretty much using an internet streaming service to watch all forms of mixed martial arts, whether we're talking about going on ESPN Plus, going on UFC Fight Pass, whatever the streaming platform may be, as opposed to, say, back in 2011, we were physically turning on Spike TV, Showtime to consume mixed martial arts.
Yeah, and there was a little less mixed martial arts action back
then. A lot less.
Yeah, I mean, I had a desire.
Don't sell us short here. A lot less.
A lot less. I had a desire to go and watch fights on Access TV or HDNet. I had a desire to watch more content. But nowadays, I'm just so overstuffed with content, I have to really actively make a decision to go and seek out something on Fight Pass, seek out Ryzen or KSW, but I don't have a hunger for it anymore because I get so much MMA each and every week where I would get a pay-per-view and, you know, 7 days later, Tai Tuivasa is going to go out to a sold out Apex with all 14 people there. So it's like, it never stops.
By the way, I just want to say kudos to the Reddit user who came up with the spreadsheet of the fighters who have never fought in front of a crowd in the UFC.
Nate Maness. A much bigger list.
Has had 6 fights in the UFC, has never fought in front of a crowd.
Get the man in front of a crowd.
He was the most. The second most was Joe Anderson Brito, who's had 5. Now, he will fight in front of a crowd at UFC 301. It is a crazy list. Alexander Munoz 3 times. Gilbert Urbina 3 times. There's a lot of fighters with 3 times. Nicholas Mota 5 times. I mean, it is this list that's on the MMA Reddit of just fighters who've never fought in front of an actual crowd. They've only fought an empty venue or the Apex is absolutely insane.
Yeah, get my man Urbina, Rio Grande Valley resident, give him in front of a crowd. And then you look at this whole thing and maybe 2 of them have a fight scheduled in front of a crowd, and for sure one of them, Brito, does. This is a hell of a list, and every single one of these fighters, get if they're still in the organization, I mean, half of them aren't, but the ones that still are, get them in front of a crowd, and the ones that aren't, get them a makeup fight in front of a crowd.
You know, when I sent you this list, you know what my first thought? I thought of the show last week where you talked about Apex shows is literally – you know, the developmental league of the UFC. And when you look at this list and you look at the names on this list, you're like, yeah, Daniel's pretty spot on.
I mean, it is. It absolutely is. The difference between the developmental league of the UFC and the developmental league in the NBA is when I go work NBA developmental league, there's actually fans in the stands and people making noise. But in terms of talent level, it's the same thing. I mean, yeah, there isn't. I would imagine you look at this list, not many of these fighters have Wikipedia profiles. You know, I'm sure Kai Kamaka does. But, you know, I don't know if, well, I don't know. But, yeah, it's a sad list. Get those fighters in front of crowds. Stop doing these damn Apex cards. Like, I have no memory of Rosenstruck Gazeev's card, and it's been 2 weeks. And I'm going to have no memory of Tuivasa Tabura's card after, you know, 2 weeks from now. It's sad.
I mean, look, all you got, we'll talk about UFC Vegas 88 later on the show, but all you have to do is look at the fight card, and you know exactly whether it's in front of fans or not. I mean, it's very clear when you just look at the fights that are on this card. But let's get into UFC 299. Of course, this past Saturday, Sean O'Malley, as we mentioned right at the beginning of the show, an absolute masterclass, getting a unanimous decision win over Chito Vera. Chito Vera just, I mean, tough as nails. I mean, some of the strikes that he took, and the fact of, I mean, you think about that knee that Sean O'Malley landed, probably finishes a majority of bantamweights, if not all bantamweights, inside the UFC. Dustin Poirier does not have a good opening round, goes out there, and, you know, as he says, he still is not going to be jumped for guillotines, even though I think he's never had a guillotine submission win in his career. Goes out there, a brutal knockout there in the second round against Benoit St. Denis. Michael Page, Kevin Holland, not the most exciting fight. Michael Page, you know, I think it's funny with Dana White basically saying how he doesn't love the walkout, which clearly he would have had to approve the walkout, because when it comes to those things. But I'm just like, yeah, Dana, you just don't like the individuality. You just want everything to be out of the UFC. Let Michael Page do his thing. Look, we'll see what happens there. Gilbert Burns is probably, 2 minutes away from winning? Mm-hmm. And Jack Della Maddalena goes out there. Peter Yan gets a win. Curtis Blaydes, come from behind victory. Man, did not look good in the opening round for him, just getting dominated on the ground. Then goes, gets that knockout there. Looking at, and of course, some of the other things. Despain, the heavyweight that made his debut, now 5-0 his career, only needs 18 seconds. I will say this, man. He's 35 years old. Of course, he's got the Taekwondo background, and it's one of those things of, like, I think the UFC is going to have to match him up correctly, because otherwise, the thing I saw with him, I was like, I just saw some sloppy technique, and I'm like, he goes up there against a heavyweight, he's got good technique, it may not go well for him.
Yeah, he's going to have to put it together, and time isn't on his side, even though he's a young 35.
At heavyweight, too.
at heavyweight, so he's got some time, but he's probably going to do a couple more dope knockouts, and then, you know, when push comes to shove, he takes on a more skilled guy. It's going to be a Gazeev Rosenstrike situation is what we're going to get. In terms of what you didn't cover, I mean, Jan's whenever Yadong was solid. Daniel Galvan went 5-0 on his main card predictions. It's also a big storyline coming out of the weekend. Gamrot out here out wrestling Rafael Dos Anjos. Not the type of performance you're going to talk to your grandma about, because she'll fall asleep. I almost did watching that fight. But shout out to Gamrot beating RDA. It's impressive. Kyler Phillips looked really good at bantamweight. Solid striking against Pedro Munhoz. And, Macy Barber, quality win over Caitlin Serminara. A pretty close rounds, but rounds that Barber won. And, to wrap up the prelims in terms of the quick recaps and kind of maybe the first story is, Michelle Pereira comes out there, beats Michael Oleksychuk real quickly, rocks him in the body, punches, taps him out. Mm-hmm. So you look at Pereira, you look at Michael Page. These are fighters who went out there and did some interesting entrances. And if you listen to Michael Page, he wanted to do an even more interesting Undertaker-style entrance. And obviously, those had to get approved. And it got turned down, according to him, the initial idea. And this is a big problem for the UFC, in my opinion. I don't know why Dana White dislikes these cool entrances. Is it as simple as not wanting fighters to be individuals? Mm-hmm. Maybe, but you are taking away moments that a fan can enjoy. I mean, the entrance for the Michael Page Kevin Holland fight would have been the most entertaining part about that fight, and would have been the thing people talk about moving forward, and would have continued to elevate Michael Page as a star. It makes you wonder how many different entrances throughout the UFC's history fans haven't been able to see, and an entrance is a very important part for the slog of monotony of fights we get each and every week. It's an opportunity for a fighter to separate themselves and become a star. And the fact that it's not a very open policy when it comes to doing that, I think really does the UFC a disservice.
You know, we can talk about Michael Page here. I mean, it was not the highlight reel performance you know that would put him into, say, a top five fight. But I do think there are some interesting stylistic matchups that they could make for him. You know, he comes in right now. He's the number 13 rank UFC welterweight in the new UFC ranking system. I look at maybe a fight against, say, Vicente Luque, Jeff Neal, Ian Garry as some matchups that really stick out to me.
True or false? Michael Page challenges for a welterweight championship in the UFC.
I lean true. Because I mean, you got to remember, he's, what, 37 years old. So it can't be a slow build. I mean, he's going to, and, you know, I mean, look, there's a true false of, you know, who's more likely to get a title shot next, Blow Muhammad or Merab?
That's a good one. They both deserve it, and they probably both won't get it. That's a damn good one, bro. I think Paige is probably one like viral knockout away.
Yeah,
if he goes out there and knocks out Luque or knocks out, you know, maybe him versus Ian Garry is a fight to make between two like top two big personalities. I think people will really get behind Paige in that fight. It wasn't an A+. It just wasn't. It was a decent night out. It was a, hello, how's it going? I'm Michael Page. But it wasn't a, hey, I'm going to grab you by the balls and take this and run with it. It was, you know, Kevin Holland was tentative. And he had every reason to be, because Michael Page is a damn good fighter. Page displayed, technically, he's damn good. But, yeah, I mean, if you're going to come away super impressed at one welterweight, it's probably the dude who like broke his arm and still got the finish over Gilbert Burns. I mean, Matt Elena is the welterweight you got to come away being impressed with, bro.
Okay, here's my thing about Jack Del and Matt Elena. We saw what Gilbert Burns able to do to him on the ground. What do you think Shavkat Rakhmonov does to him? Like, you look at who is ranked in front of Jack Del and Matt Elena right now, and tell me who you pick him against: Colby Covington, Shavkat Rakhmonov, Bilal Muhammad, Kamaru Usman. I don't know if he can beat any of those guys because the grappling deficiencies he has in his game.
Yeah, you're right about that. All those guys are so strong in that aspect. I mean, the one thing with Jake Della is he's passed every test that's been thrown his way, but this is the tests are about to get a whole lot harder. And beating Gilbert Burns is impressive, and the one aspect of his game that makes him unique, you know, is he's a better stand-up fighter than a lot of those names.
Agreed.
He is. It's just, I agree with you. You're not wrong. I mean, there's a glaring hole. He's not going to be a favorite in most of those fights, if not all of them. But he's certainly earned that shot up the ladder. And I think what will benefit him is five-round fights and opportunity to finish fights. But we'll see. I thought overall, when you look at that main card, it wasn't the greatest main card of all time. Mm-hmm. I had more fun watching UFC 298. You know, Jan Stung was fine. It was a fine fight, but, you know, the number one fight out of 299, without a question, is Poirier Beyonce Denis. Like, that's the memory I'm going to have. Like, when I'm aging and I'm losing my memory, and I'm in my hospital bed, I'm still going to remember Poirier and Benoit St. Denis. I'm probably going to forget everything else. But, like, that was one of those fights where it's just like, Dustin's an effing legend. You tried counting that dude out. You thought that dude was going to be the victim of a Joe Silva matchup as a dog against his Benoit St. Denis. And he said, hold my freaking Louisiana hot sauce. I'm going to give this guy a two-piece. And he got that win. I mean, I tell you what, Jason, Dustin Poirier is becoming my favorite fighter in the UFC right now. My first favorite fighter was Forrest Griffin. But when you look at the energy that Dustin brings, man, I think he's my favorite fighter today.
Yeah, I mean, and look, it did not go well for Dustin Poirier in that opening round. And for if you did not see the quote, this was when Poirier was on the MAR quote, it looked like I was talking to Trump. I was talking to Dana. I said, hey, you want me to fight this young MF-er, huh? this is what happens. This is what I told him. I mean, and by the way, for anyone who's not seen the Dustin Poirier interview on the MMA Hour, I highly recommend going and watching it. He talked about the mental struggles that he had following that loss to Justin Gaethje, which, by the way, if you're Justin Gaethje, and there's that clip going around online of him reacting to, clearly he did not like Benoit Saint-Denis. Clearly did not like Benoit Saint-Denis. But is he sitting back going, God damn it, I got talked into taking this BMF matchup against Max Holloway, and I'm about to lose a title shot against Islam Makhachev.
I know. He's got the win over Poirier. Beat Fazeev. Poor dude. But, I mean, I don't know. All he's got to do, bro, is go out there and kick some ass, and the momentum is going to shift in his favor. But, you know, the thing is, we haven't seen the Poirier-Makhachev fight. And obviously, we haven't seen the Gaethje-Makhachev fight. So it's like, I think it's going to be recency bias. I think UFC 300 is going to happen. And if Gaethje performs well, he gets the fight. But what? He could lose that matchup.
What if Armin Sarukian goes out in styles on Charles Oliveira at UFC 300?
It's possible that we also see that one. But that's another one where I think the most likely scenario is Oliveira wins. But if Sarukian beats Oliveira, I still actually think he's going to be behind both Gaethje and Poirier. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think Gaethje and Poirier are going to be two fighters that, if you're the UFC, straight up, that's going to sell more pay-per-views than Sarukian and Makhachev, even with a really good performance. Although, who knows? I mean, maybe Sarukian can become a star with the wide audience of UFC 300. I doubt it. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, there's a reason why Gaethje's fight is above him on the billing. But it just reinforced the fact that Poirier is one of the top stars of the UFC, and he had to grow to build there. It wasn't one of those meteoric rises like Jon Jones or Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey, where they were immediately a big star. But through hard work, through attitude, through performances, Dustin Poirier has resonated with fans. And he is one of the biggest stars in that UFC brand.
I will say, being out and about and watching UFC 299 and talking to people in the bar industry, and the one thing that's very clear to me is that whether or not you like Sean O'Malley or not, this kid is on the verge of becoming a superstar. I don't know if you saw this. He was on Pat McAfee's show yesterday. Dropped 13 F-bombs on ESPN.
I didn't see that he dropped 13 F-bombs.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Wow. Yeah. Look, O'Malley is it's simple. He's a cool dude. And that resonates with people.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the way he talks, the name, the fight style, where he's from, Boston, the East Coast. He's a cool dude, and it's not a surprise that he's resonating with people. If he continues to win and continues to become maybe a two-time champion, two-division champion, he will go down as one of the biggest stars in the promotion, no doubt about it. And, I just think he's a really special striker. He's a hell of a fighter, a hell of a champion. He's going to go down as one of the best bantamweights of all time. There's still quite a few fighters that are above him, including Merab, who's still fighting. But if he beats Merab Dalavishvili, the world is his oyster. I really don't think that's going to happen. But at the end of the day, you look at Merab's fight against Cejudo. You see how Cejudo rocked him in round one. I mean, Sean's got dynamite in his hands. Sean can knock out anyone. If the fight stays standing, he will beat most people in that weight class, yeah, if not all of them. He's that good with his hand speed, his movement, and his choices. So he's one of the better strikers we've ever seen in the 135-pound weight class. He's got the personality to boot. And no doubt, Jason, Sean's a huge star.
Yeah, and I also think there needs to be a lot of credit given to Tim Welch and what he's been able to do as Sean O'Malley's head coach and developing him. I was watching a video last week where Tim was talking about the Aljo fight, where they had saw this tendency And he said it was something that he goes, ultimately the way Sean got the knockout in that fight was something that we prepped for all camp, but knowing how it's going to be, and just, you know, it was a great performance. I think, like, when you talk about master classes done in UFC title fights, this has to be up there. And Cheeto, I mean, look, it was, I mean, the guy is, you know, he's tougher than a $2 steak. I mean, let's call it what it is, or tougher than the back wall at a gun range. I mean, this dude is just absolutely tough. I mean, you take that knee that he took, and it'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, because there was a lot of media that came into Miami from Ecuador to cover this fight because of Cheeto Vera. Dana White was asked about potentially going to Ecuador. He really was not really wanting to commit to saying we're going to go to Ecuador, which I pretty much probably took as Dana White saying, hey, Ecuadorian government, you want us to come? Got our phone number.
Yeah, give us a site fee. That's how you get people to, that's how you get a UFC show, is that site fee, brother. It's not about whether or not it's going to be a cool show for the fans. It's about, are you going to pay us to come there? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll go. I mean, that's the UFC strategy.
Oh, you mean like the commercial during the UFC pay-per-view talking about all the tax businesses in downtown Miami that are benefiting from the UFC pay-per-view? Oh, that wasn't an ad. No, not at all.
Yeah, that look, bro. I gotta say it. We don't get political often, but for the love of God, can we stop it with the Republican stuff? Like I'm not even saying don't do it. Yes, the former president's there, but as someone who maybe doesn't necessarily lean that way often, I lean that way sometimes. You know, I'm born in Texas. I'm a Texas boy. It's a little much. It's like every pay-per-view. And you look at it, and today, and this past one, Trump got like a whole entrance and everything. And you're like, he's at every pay-per-view. It's like, it kind of feels like a campaign event for him and like an opportunity
to
make him more of like a, he's the UFC's guy. And the UFC has a wide audience. And I got to be honest with you, as a consumer – and maybe the thing that really put over the edge is kind of celebrating somebody like Candace Owens as like a celebrity. And it's like, for someone who grew up and listening to some of her opinions, they were kind of bad, really bad opinions. And I was like, oh, as a viewer, I really don't like it. I know a big portion of the audience leans that way, but just I would say, like, have a little more consideration for your entire audience, because not everyone likes that much every pay-per-view.
It's still surreal to me, even though we've now seen this happen multiple times, it's still surreal to me as a longtime combat sports consumer, a longtime consumer of the UFC, to see a former president, and most, and let's just be honest about it, probably, you know, will be our president, you know, come 2025, is walking out. And I'm just saying this, you need to have someone in your circle that looks at you the way Dana White looks at Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
We all want our girl to look at us like the way Dana White looks at Donald Trump.
Yeah, or also, what's his name? Nick Bosa was so happy. He was so happy. I saw that viral clip where he was just with Joe Burrow, just smiling ear to ear. And again, it's not like I'm out here being like, don't invite him. Like, nah, he's a former president. Like, it makes sense. Like, he's a freaking former president.
Okay, here's my question.
Just tone it down a little bit.
Like, does Donald never not wear a suit?
Yeah.
Outside of him on the golf course wearing a polo shirt, I don't think I've ever, like, would it freak you out if you saw Donald come out in, like, a jeans and a t-shirt?
That would be weird. That would certainly
be weird. You bet he walked out with, like, an Affliction shirt on?
Yeah, I can. I would be interested to see what it is in his wardrobe. Other than if he goes to his closet and just all white long sleeves and red ties, you know, there's a t-shirt in there.
How much MAGA gear sit in that closet?
I know, right? It's gotta be a really red room. But yeah, I mean, it's become the MAGA.
No, you know what Donald should walk out in.
What's that?
If he came out in a t-shirt with his mugshot on?
Yeah. Yeah. That's...
But it's one of these sayings of... it is still fascinating to me. And I mean, look, I think it's, if you watch the sport, you kind of, I think, know how a lot of people line politically based on, you know, the reaction to him. But every time Trump is cage side, every fighter's going up to him.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that we'd have a former president cage side at a UFC event, I would probably said, you're smoking some good stuff. Like, I'd be like, what strain are you smoking? Because I want that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely bananas. It's crazy for that to happen. It is an election year. It's a very political time. You know, he will probably be the next president, I think, without a doubt. The last time he was president and somebody got voted in, he didn't do much to stop people invading the Capitol, so that's a little concerning. But we'll forget that didn't happen and just kind of be really happy.
He needs Sean Strickland there for him. Sean Strickland has head of security.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of Sean Strickland, I sent Daniel this emoji. So it was a Sean Strickland tweet. He said, Roadhouse 2 is the most accurate storyline ever. UFC fighter to broke bouncer. 90% of the current roster's future. LOL.
Damn. Damn.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. It's, unfortunately, I mean, look at the sad freaking post-fight presser from Pedro. Tyson Pedro a couple weeks ago. I mean, that's the real life.
But you know what? I know it's easy to kind of magically talk about fighter pay when it comes to that, and they're very much in the conversation there, but also, like, did Pedro make all the best financial decisions?
Probably not, but the UFC makes a shit ton of money, and they pay fighters jack shit.
Oh, I know, bro. Look, you talk about, if you would have told me 10 years ago that the UFC would do a $14 million gate in Miami, I would have said no goddamn way. But, like, I heard Luke Thomas talking about this, and, you know, and he was talking about on his post-fight reaction video that he did. We all look at these UFC ticket prices, and we're all just like, it's that sticker shock, you know? And you're like, Jesus Christ. But you know what? They keep selling on every damn show. These prices are not going down. They're going to continue to rise.
The product is hot as hell. The pay-per-view product is very hot. It's doing so well. A few years ago, it kind of felt like it was in a little bit of a lower level than it was during the days of Rousey and McGregor and Jones and Brock fighting often. But the UFC brand, and maybe it's a strategy, but the UFC brand has really turned a corner, and basically, anytime they go out on pay-per-view, they sell, both in the arena and on pay-per-view. So, without a doubt, the UFC has done a good job of managing themselves. I mean, the sport is very healthy. The promotion is very healthy. And the deal with ESPN, I think, has just been phenomenal for them.
Yeah, I mean, there was that story that came out this week where the top executives of you know, the parent company, Endeavor, TKO, they very much are wanting to be back at ESPN, but know that there's going to be other there's three other providers that are looking at them. And I did find it very interesting at the post-fight press conference, Dana White was asked about Jake Paul, Mike Tyson being on Netflix, and more, you know, and he answered, of course, I think way you'd expect him to answer about that. Of course, that story drops right after we did the podcast last week when we were talking about Jake Paul. But, you know, the fact is, like, and you could kind of, as Dana White was talking about Netflix, you could definitely tell there was like that kind of like that, man, what could Netflix offer us? We all know Netflix is getting into the WWE business. You know, there's more, you know, they are definitely getting into the live event aspect of it. But man, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this UFC TV deal, because they're going to get a massive deal, whether it's ESPN Plus, whether it's Netflix or whoever it may be, they're going to get a massive deal. But yeah, you're spot on. The product is on fire right now. And, you know, the one thing is when the UFC does these, you know, premium events, pay-per-view events. I mean, they stack them. I mean, and overall, like, I enjoyed watching UFC 299. It was a great show, you know, throughout. I mean, there were some fights that maybe weren't the most exciting fights in the world, but overall, man, it was a quality night of watching fights.
Yeah, it was. It was. It wasn't the most memorable night in the promotion's history. They're not always going to be home runs. This was a nice little single as we head into the baseball season. It was a nice little single, maybe a ground rule double. We had some good fights, had some decent fights, had some forgettable fights, you know. Jan, Paige, Madalena, Poirier all continue to move forward. We didn't really talk too much about Yudong and Jan. The only thing I'll say is Song looks really good in round one. And Peter Yan returned to form. But yeah, 299 was good. Fun pay-per-view. I enjoyed talking about it with my friends. Miami's a phenomenal crowd. And yeah, now we're back in the apex. Maybe the TV deal is going to be – I mean, does Mark Zuckerberg want to do streaming? Or do they want to be on Instagram TV? I don't know. Maybe that's the dark horse. Maybe Meta's going to want to do some type of streaming service. And,
well, you know, today is going to be, as we're recording this podcast here on March 13th, today's going to be a very interesting day in social media because TikTok potentially being banned in the U.S. today. And
that could happen today?
Yeah, the House is voting on it today because of the Chinese influence on TikTok. So, when I was at the gym yesterday, there's all these TVs up there, and I saw, I don't know whether it was Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they have all of them on. And so I just see, like, what's on the crawl thing, and they were talking about this vote on potentially banning TikTok. And so I guess Trump made a comment essentially saying that if TikTok gets banned in the U.S., it's only going to double what Facebook and Meta does. It's... UFC is going to get a crap ton of money from whoever wants to get their rights. I mean, it's going to be, it's from a sporting aspect. I hope Sean O'Malley's next fight is against Merab. I'm more confident Bilal Muhammad gets Leon Edwards next than I am confident that Merab Dovzhvili gets Sean O'Malley next.
I'm going to go more confident that Merab gets Sean O'Malley next, but again, it's hard to be confident either way. I mean, what's more likely? Merab versus Sean, Bilal versus Leon, Francis versus, you know, in a PFL cage next. What's the most likely scenario? Which of the three is going to happen now that you've given the odds to Bilal?
This is my thing about Francis. And by the way, I mean, that was a brutal knockout. I mean, brutal knockout. He's made so much money in these past two fights. Is there motivation to go to PFL?
I think so.
And maybe he feels like he owes it to the PFL, that he has to give them at least one fight. But the guy's made so much damn money that... I mean, look, I hope he does, and so hit and gets that payday, that $2 million payday. But I'd probably say Francis fighting the PFL is more likely than the other two, but I'm not confident in that. I mean, it's one of those things where when I watched that knockout, my initial thought was, what is going through Tyson Fury's brain right now?
Yeah, it's something where Francis is no longer this boxing phenom. It now becomes, wow, that was a really cool story that it happened. Mm-hmm. You begin to have some questions about Tyson Fury's preparation. But at the end of the day, an unprepared Tyson Fury still nearly losing to Francis Ngannou is still a pretty impressive performance for when you look at what Ngannou did. I mean... going up against a unprepared Tyson Fury, knocking him down, nearly beating him, still impressive. Can you imagine if I love him, but if Derek Lewis put on some boxing gloves and took on Tyson Fury that night, I don't think it would have been a close match. I really don't. This was kind of like a return to reality for Francis and maybe the hype train we put around him, because Anthony Joshua – I mean, this is what these guys do their entire lives. It was a brutal knockout. The big winner was the PFL because he's now more likely to return to the PFL. And to answer your question, do you have enough money? Don't think it's ever enough. I really don't. I think especially when you come from the adversity that Francis faced in his life, he's in grab-bagging time of his life. These next few years, he's going to grab as many bags as he can. And I don't think he's going to be done grabbing bags. So I think MMA return is inevitable now.
Yeah, I was just going to Best Fight Odds, see maybe if there was a future odds on his PFL debut. And if you tell me that Francis Ngannou loses his PFL debut, I would not be shocked.
I mean, you look at what Ferreira did to Bader. It wouldn't be shocking. And the question would be, what does that do to Francis's stock moving forward? I mean, I think it would obviously dramatically hurt it, and there would be a lot less interest in him moving forward with a loss. But we'll see, man.
At the end of the day, Francis Ngannou got generational wealth in these last two fights. You know, he should not have money issues for himself for the rest of his life, and his family shouldn't have any money issues. I mean, just he's made so much money. It was a brutal knockout, but also, like you talk about, Anthony Joshua had the killer mentality. When he dropped in that second round, he said, screw it, I'm finishing this thing.
Yep. He was maybe it really was good for Joshua's career to take this fight because it really revitalized the perception of him, and I think people are now excited to see him take on these top heavyweights and maybe get that heavyweight crown as the best heavyweight in the world after the initial, you know, roadblock in his career. So good for Joshua. You could see the respect he had for Ngannou. And what will be interesting moving forward is whether or not this is going to be the whole book of Francis Ngannou's boxing career or just the first two chapters, what he does next. He's already, I'm going to say he's 37 years old, so, you know, clock is ticking. But what Francis does next will be interesting. Against Henan Ferreira, I'm picking Francis Ngannou. I am. I know Ferreira has the knockout ability, but, I mean, what would the odds have been if Ngannou, after his last UFC fight, took on Henan Ferreira? It would have been like 20-1.
I mean, kind of what my thoughts is, when you get brutally knocked out like the way he did, is, you know, How do you bounce back? You know, it's one of these things of, and like you just mentioned, I mean, Francis Ngannou's not a young guy. Even at heavyweight, he's kind of still kind of quote-unquote in his prime. But like, by the time he fights Henan Ferreira, we're going to talk about 2-3 years since his last MMA fight.
It's been a long time. Again, he's not a young guy. Ferreira's 34, right? It's been a long time. The biggest question is going to be focus and how much time has gone into it. But the one thing he's shown in his boxing career is when he gets in a fight camp, he delivers. He delivers the work. And I think he's going to do it moving forward. I mean, over under on PFL fights, I would set it at 2.5. And I think it's probably going to be under. How many fights did he sign a deal for? 2 or 3?
I don't know if it ever came out how many. I think it was just a multi-year deal. I mean, like, if you set the over under at 1.5 PFL fights, I might still say under.
I would go over. I think it's going to be 2. And I think the way this career plays out is pretty simple. I do think Francis is going to fight out his PFL deal. I think he's going to win all his PFL fights. And I do believe he's going to go to the UFC and fight John Jones. That is what I think is going to happen. I think that's going to be John Jones' last fight in the UFC. That is the timeline that I'm hoping happens.
I don't feel confident that happens. I look at it and like one of my things is I wonder what is going to be the appetite in the MMA fan base to pay for a Francis Ngannou PFL pay-per-view. Because, I mean, certainly. Like, look, there could be people in this MMA media industry that are not going to like what I say, but I come from a different perspective. Francis Ngannou did not bring a crowd out. I'm just telling you, he did not. And I just wonder, from an MMA PFL audience, you say a $50 Francis Ngannou Henan Ferreira pay-per-view, do people get excited for that? I just don't know if they do. But I think, unfortunately for the PFL, I think they have to put it on pay-per-view unless they just want to burn cash.
Yeah. They got to get some return on investment. It's not going to be a fight that appeals to a large crowd, but I will tell you that Francis versus Ferreira is interesting to me. And it's more interesting than what PFL has done on pay-per-view thus far, even including the champion versus champion cards. It's probably the most interesting fight they've put on pay-per-view since.
Mm-hmm.
That still doesn't mean it's going to make money or do good business, but that's kind of where I would qualify it.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of PFL, the WTF moment of the week had to come from PFL Paris. So Cedric was on the MMA Hour, and he said, like, you talk about the weird stuff that happens in sport. He says he stepped on a piece of glass in the third round, but says that the piece of glass came in because Tony Parker stepped in the cage with Timberland boots and the PFL didn't sweep the cage after. What the fuck?
Bro, this isn't just a WTF moment of the week. This is a contender for WTF moment of the year. I mean, Cedric Doumbé is one of their big stars on the rise, one of their major prospects. And the fact that he got his loss because there was glass in the cage and that his fellow, that Tony Parker was involved, NBA star, unbelievable WTF story. Shout out to PFL. They had a great crowd in Paris. I mean, France is just loving mixed martial arts. And crowds like that is what gets you excited to be an MMA fan. But for Doumbé, I mean, before stepping on the glass, it was a bit of a step back in that fight. Right, he lost round one, got out wrestled. He got back up to his feet. Round two, he did win. He did win that round, and I think he would have won that decision. But Jason, I've never seen that before. I've never seen a fight stop due to a foreign object inside a person's foot.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the bizarre fight endings. It has to be the most bizarre fight ending I've ever seen.
No, that is the most bizarre. I can't think of another one. It's going to go down with some of the most bizarre things that have ever happened in this sport. Like, along with Kevin Randleman slipping backstage and knocking himself out. Cedric Doumbé stepping on glass in the middle of a fight. Not even the beginning. In the middle of a fight. Tony Parker's to blame. And I can guarantee you one thing. The next time you go to a PFL event, there's going to be some people sweeping the canvas.
And look, and note to fighters, you can't call a timeout inside of a fight.
Oh, imagine if you could. Imagine you call one timeout. That'd be amazing. But yeah, that's not a rule. I don't
think you're saying either. So you're saying Benoit St. Denis would have called a timeout right before Dustin Poirier landed that kill shot on the ground?
Yeah, imagine that. Or like you're in a submission, you can call a timeout, you can go refocus.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I understand Cedric's frustrations with Mark Goddard, but the thing is, Mark Goddard is one of the best referees. He may be the best referee in the business today. And, you know, look, it's a bizarre ending. Cedric, I think, is still one of the bright spots that PFL does have as they're developing this international talent. So we'll see what happens there. UFC Vegas 88 is this weekend. Of course, it's in the Apex. Tatu Avassa, the main event, taking on Marcin Tybura. And I was going through this fight card, and it is on paper. It is tough to get excited about this fight card. I'm just being honest with you here. It's one of the more interesting storylines to me on this fight card is actually a fighter that is a betting favorite, this one. And this is Isaac Dolgarian. And His road to the UFC has been a very interesting road. He was on the Dana White's looking for a fight that basically it was presented as that someone was going to get sponsored by the Nelk Boys. But what it really truly was the Nelk Boys were trying to manage a fighter. And that's kind of what really halted the career of Isaac Dolgarian. Yeah, bro.
That's embarrassing as hell, bro. That's a shit show.
Here's my issue with that. When they were doing all that, is what is the business relationship between Dana White and the Nelk Boys?
I don't know, man.
He clearly has some financial investment in that podcast. He clearly has an investment.
Yeah.
I've listened to that podcast. I guess it's just not for me.
No, I haven't, but just the term Nelk Boys immediately turns me off. Just that turns me off. Maybe
I would just say this. I watched an interview they did with someone that I know, and I was like, holy crap, they did no research for this interview.
Yeah, that's whenever you got 400,000 podcasts, give me a podcast where people who actually care about what they're talking about to do that. Dude, Jason, I want you to do this for me.
All right.
What are the top five fights of UFC Fight Night, Tyabasa, Tybora? Give me your top five fights. Lay it out for the people. Do it for me. I dare
you. You got to go with the main event, number one. All right. Number two.
So the main event featuring two dudes coming off losses. Number one, Tybora, Tuivasa. Okay.
See, then I start to kind of go to who have always liked watching fight.
That's rough that you're already going there. Like that, maybe if that was the fifth fight. Number two, you're already like, which dude do I or girl do I kind of like watching? Jeez Louise.
Brian Barberena is just a guy who always brings it. He's always a fun guy to watch.
Your number two fight is Brian Barberena and Gerald Mershart. And the problem is, that's my number two fight, too. This card says
when I was putting together our rundown sheet, and I like Brian Battle. I like Brian. He's a good dude. But the fact that this is the co-main event, I think just tells you a lot about this fight card.
Barberena has lost three in a row, and Mershart has lost two in a row. This is an awful fight card, bro. This is so bad.
When's the last time Ovince St. Preux won a fight?
This was before he became a saint. Against Shogun Hua, May 2022, and before that, 2020 against Alonzo Mayfield. He just doesn't fight often. You know, I mean, the one fight I'm kind of into is like, you know, Natan Levy.
Ovince St. Preux is 4-7 in his last 11 fights.
Yeah, not great.
And he's a 4-1 underdog against Kenny Njekwu.
He's a 4-1 dog?
Yeah.
Screw it. Give me OSP. If he's a 4-1 dog against Kenny Njekwu, I'll take that money.
Mike Davis versus Natan Levy may be one of the better fights on this card.
It's a top five fight on this card. Top five fight on this card, bro. Let's see what else. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you're probably going to find better fights if you did a combination of the KSW and the two Cage Warriors events that were happening this weekend. You'll probably find more higher quality fights amongst those main events.
Well, I mean, look, you're going to see here. I'm still going to watch it, but on paper, it doesn't get me excited.
No, this card sucks. Who's going to win, Tuivasa or Tybora?
I mean, if Tybora can grapple, I mean, I would lean to Tuivasa just because of the power, but I definitely see the path to Tybora winning this fight.
Yeah, I agree. I see what you're saying. I like what you're putting down. I'm going to go with Tuivasa, largely due to the fact that I like the fact that he drinks alcohol out of a shoe. That's my big reason for picking him. But, I mean, yeah, I think maybe.
I mean, who's going to be there for him to do a shoey from? The guy that just spent $1,500 because he needs a little addiction.
Yeah.
Get his gambling addiction in.
Yeah, bro. Can we get to New Jersey? Can we get to New Jersey for this fight night event? Because, we got back-to-back Apex cards. At least Rebus and Namajunas is a badass fight. I am excited for that one.
Yeah, but main card, 7 o'clock Eastern time, coming up here on Saturday, UFC Vegas 88. Let's wrap up the show talking about some various news and notes. So we're 10 days away from the first Bellator event of 2024. And you know what, Daniel? You know what we don't know? How the hell we're going to watch this thing.
Is that true?
PFL has not announced where United States residents are going to be able to watch Bellator next week.
What's your gut instinct, DAZN?
Yeah, that's my. To me, I'm sure they probably have something finalized, but I feel like they know, it just feels like they know it's going to be an announcement that is not going to be loved by the MMA audience. And that's why I feel like we're going to see Bellator on DAZN. And I just happened to look up yesterday, what does a DAZN monthly subscription cost? $20 a month.
It's a lot of money.
I think to me, if it's not DAZN, it's ESPN Plus. And purely biased, I hope it's ESPN Plus.
So right now they just have DAZN will be on all the international markets, but they haven't announced that it's going to be in the US.
You're 10 days out and you have, and as a US consumer, we have no idea how we're going to be able to take in Bellator next week.
Yeah. For me, ESPN Plus is the way to go. Put it on YouTube. I don't know. Now you can't put it on YouTube if you have an international deal with DAZN. For me, it's put on ESPN Plus, please.
Yeah, it is. By the way, speaking of PFL, they did announce their full fight cards for the first three events of the 2024 season. Of course, kicks off April the 4th in San Antonio, April 12th, Las Vegas, and then April 19th, it will be in Chicago. The April 4th show will be the heavyweight and women's flyweight kickoff. Then April 12th will be light heavyweight and lightweight, and then Chicago will be welterweight and featherweight. And one of the things that you see is a ton of Bellator fighters are in these tournaments. You look at the heavyweight division, Valentin Moldavsky, Linton Vassell, Tyrell Fortune, Daniel James, also Steve Mowry, all in it. One of the things that did stick out to me about the San Antonio show was Lucas Brynn, the undefeated featherweight. He'll be a part of a featherweight showcase matchup on this fight card. Of course, that card will also feature the PFL debut of Thalia Santos, who just signed with PFL just a couple of weeks ago. Then you look at the April the 12th show. Bellator fighters, I'll be in the tournament. Phil Davis, by the way, will be taking on Rob Wilkinson. That should be an interesting matchup. Alex Polazzi, Patricky Pitbull, Maz Burnell, Brent Primus, J.J. Wilson, Adam Piccolotti. And then coming up here on the April 19th, Koreshkov's going to be in the main event. Also, you got Pedro Carvalho, Logan Storley, among others. One name that I was kind of surprised not to see on that welterweight was Brandon Ward. I know he has been campaigning to try to get a matchup here. So, the one thing I'll say about the PFL, when you look at these first three fight cards, like, you're giving me a ton of reasons to tune in. And that's all we can ask out of PFL.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be an exciting time for the PFL. There's a lot of good stuff happening outside the UFC. And, we'll dig into it. I mean, next week's going to be a big non-UFC week. We got Ryzen. Octagon MMA's back. Sorry, I had a sneeze. Octagon MMA's back. Apparently, it's their, according to MMA Reddit, it's their version of the UFC 300. Carlos de Mola, Attila Vega. Apparently, these are two big stars in that promotion. Really big stars. Hundreds of thousands of followers on their Instagram. So, yeah, I mean, things are looking up if you're a fan of non-UFC and mixed martial arts, and we'll be covering it. And, yeah, it's going to be a... I think it'll be an enjoyable PFL season. If you're a hardcore MMA fan, you know who these fighters are. You can follow their careers. Between that and some of these Bellator fights, you're going to get some good content, brother.
By the way, we did get the pay-per-view lineup for UFC 300. And I know the thing that it feels like most people are kind of a little surprised by is the fact that Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage is on the pay-per-view. And here's why I'm not surprised by that. I think the UFC was looking for a fight that they felt was going to end in the first round. And I think a high probability Bo Nickel and Cody Brundage will end in the first round.
Yeah, that's a good call, bro. Because you have a chance of 3 5-round fights on that main card. And I think Bo Nickel, Brundage is sure a first round. And you can tell the story that Bo Nickel's, you know, spent his entire UFC career, you know, not including the Contender Series shows, but his entire UFC career, you know, on pay-per-view main cards. That's a nice little story to tell as well.
I mean, look, this is telling you, when you're talking about the fourth fight of the card, not the fourth fight of the pay-per-view, the fourth fight of the card is Jalen Turner versus Renato Mancano.
I mean, the first fight is Davis and Cody Garbrandt. It's a damn good pay-per-view, mm-hmm. My man. Damn good stacked card. And
literally, one of these fights could easily headline a fight night card. Whether it's at the Apex or in front of fans.
If I go out there and I fight a person named Steve in my parking lot at my apartment, that might be able to headline an Apex card as well, Jason. That is not saying much.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I was having this conversation with some people on Sunday. We were talking about UFC 300 and comparing it to UFC 299. And I just said the thing about what I would say why you're more interested in UFC 300 is just because if you're going to watch from fight one to fight 13, it's probably the deepest card the UFC's ever done.
That is a fact. I would say that it's absolutely a fact. All those fights belong on a pay-per-view main card. And that to me is the draw of UFC 300. They don't have the big draw, but the it's loaded. It's an absolutely loaded card.
I mean, like, if you looked at it and you said, tell me the fight you're the least interested in at UFC 300. Hate to say it. Is one of those contenders Jim Miller versus Bobby Green?
Number two. I mean, the fight I'm probably least interested in is either Lopez Youssef or Andrade Rodriguez. Those would be the two. I would put Miller Green above those two for sentimental reasons.
Yeah.
I want to see Jim Miller fight, and I know Bobby Green is likely going to throw some hands. So, like, you know, that could be a fight of the night contender. So I would say either Youssef and Lopez or Marina Rodriguez and Jessica Andrade should be the least interesting fight for me.
Yeah. It is.
No disrespect. No disrespect. It's just that good of a card.
By the way, as we start to wrap things up here, John Nash had a tweet yesterday. And the tweet was a picture. And the caption was, on the schedule, U.S. District Court, District of Nevada, Monday, April 15th, 2024, Lee versus Zuffa.
Let's go. And John Nash, I know Bloody Elbow is no longer, you know, doing quality content, but I look forward to following you wherever you go, my man. I'm looking forward to your coverage of this event. It could be one of the most important things to happen in the sports history.
Yeah, I mean, this thing has been going on for so long that I never knew we would get here, but man, it is going to be fascinating what comes out in court.
Yeah. You're right. I'm excited because it's been a long time coming. And a lot of things are going to come out.
I think there's going to be a lot of people that I think people are going to start questioning.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be, I'll say this, I'm very interested of what comes out in relation to contract negotiations between the UFC and managers. That to me will be one of the more fascinating things I think that could potentially come out. And is there conflicts of interest that managers have shown that they are not necessarily fighting for their athletes? They're making sure they're protecting themselves.
And what happens if that is confirmed, right? What's the fallout of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not wrong.
We'll see. I mean, maybe there won't be any fallout, you know. We've seen people continue to get taken advantage of, even if that happened. And if the facts come out, we've seen people still allow themselves to be taken advantage of. Snake oil salesmen still are able to sell snake oil in this sport. But there are going to be a lot of people who are going to look like an emperor without clothes,
mm-hmm.
whenever some of the facts come out.
Yeah, it is. I think it'll be fascinating to see what is said on the witness stand. That to me will be fascinating. And I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of lawyers who are going to make a lot of money on this case, no matter what side they are defending.
No doubt. Those are the type of people that always win these situations. The ones that got their fancy lawyer degree.
Yes, yes. At the end of the day, lawyers will make their money. And it is not cheap to get a lawyer. Let me just say this. As someone who is very well aware, it is not cheap.
Yeah, yeah. It's look, man, you go to school for 8 years and you got to stress out about it. You're going to charge a pretty penny for your legal services.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you ain't wrong. Oh, you are not wrong about that. But, of course, as always, we appreciate everyone tuning in for this episode of the podcast. Of course, I'm actually going to check out a spring training game this afternoon.
Yeah. Who are the Rays playing?
I'm going to a Phillies game. I want to say they're playing the Tigers. I'm in a suite. So.
All right, good. Baseball season's coming up.
Yeah. Beverages and food will be consumed.
You're going to have a headache the day after. It'll be a good weekend.
I just pop those two ibuprofens.
Yeah. Get back.
But is St. Patrick's a big deal in the Rio Grande?
Not really, but people drink. But it's not a big deal.
So gives them a reason to drink.
Yeah, I'll be out in Fort Worth for that, doing a wrestling show. So it will be a big deal over there. So I'm excited for that.
So you got a singles match, tag team match?
I honestly don't know. I'm going with my partner, Mooncat. We're driving up there, and we'll see what the hell we're doing. I have no idea what we're doing. I just know the show's called This Is Manly, and there will be a mustache competition.
A mustache competition?
And a beard competition. So that's all I know. I don't know.
I can't grow a beard. I can't grow a mustache. It's just stubble.
Mm-hmm. I just choose not to. I have no idea if I could or couldn't. But I just stay away.
I feel like if you didn't shave for a week or two, you would probably fill in there.
Yeah, I shaved like 3 days ago, so here we are. But my dad has a mustache, so I just kind of want to stay out of his territory.
Yeah, I can't do it. It's just stubble.
Yeah, it's okay, man. It's okay. You look good the way you are, buddy.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
I might be a cocky asshole saying, yeah, I know I'm fucking sexy as shit.
Yeah, I know I'm sexy. I know it.
But yeah, man, yeah. So catch that out. And then, there's a bunch of like St. Patrick's events going on here. So I'll probably, I think. And then our soccer team kicks off their season this weekend. So I think I'm going to check that out on Saturday. It's always a fun time. And yeah, so I was telling this to my buddy, like, to me, like, soccer's like hockey. I feel like you have to go to really enjoy it. I just think TV takes so much out of it.
It's simple. It needs your attention. It needs your focus. You need to care about what's happening. If you aren't paying attention, it's so easy to not care. You got to pay attention to where the hell the ball is. So, yeah, you go out there, you hang out with your friends, and you just be like, put the ball in the net. Like, that's how you watch the sport, and that's why hockey and soccer is really enjoyable in person. But you're on the couch, and you start looking at your phone, and it's just impossible. So, yeah, man, that sounds like a fun sports weekend for you, my man.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. So it should be a good weekend, and obviously we'll watch the UFC on Saturday. I'll probably watch a little bit of it live. Probably the main card. I'll catch after the fact. But of course we'll be back here next week to get you ready for everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Appreciate you tuning in for this episode of the MMA Report podcast.